From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. An end-of-life doula offers compassion and companionship to the dying and the people who love them. We talk with Debbie Geffen-Jones, bereavement program manager at Gilchrist, about what it takes to assume the doula role. And Kay Burney, who has volunteered in bereavement services for more than a decade, tells us what she's learned as an end-of-life doula and how it differs from the stereotype some people might expect.
I get more life-affirming lessons from working with people who are dying or people who are going through their grief for a loved one who has died than I do from anything else I do, because I see the resiliency in human nature.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. The idea of a birth doula, an individual who attends mothers during childbirth to offer support, is a familiar concept. But an end-of-life doula is not as common, though he or she performs a similar function to offer compassion and companionship to the dying and their families and caregivers. Other terms sometimes used are death companions, death midwives, and palliative care doulas. Gilchrist, a local provider of medical, hospice, and counseling services, has offered training for end-of-life doulas since 2009. Here to talk about the training and Gilchrist's other services is bereavement program manager Debbie Geffen-Jones. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How did Gilchrist decide to offer end-of-life doula training?
Well, before I was the bereavement program manager, I managed our volunteer program, and I had been doing some research on folks sitting with the dying, and we decided to implement it as a volunteer program. So it is an all-volunteer-based program at Gilchrist.
And why did you think that was an important thing
because
to offer?
Because folks don't want to die alone, and yet they have no one left, especially individuals living in nursing homes or assisted livings, maybe the last survivor of their family, and they don't want to die alone. And so someone sitting with them bedside when they are at their last stages of life is very comforting, and it is very calming.
And this idea of an end-of-life doula, has this been around for a long time?
It has. Other hospice programs call it 11th hour or vigil programs. We chose end-of-life doula as our name for the program because I thought it was softer. It just has a softer tone to it.
Is that because of its connection to the idea of birth?
I think so, yes. You know, there's a lot of similarities between birthing and dying. It takes work. The body works hard to give birth, and the body works hard to die.
What does the training consist of?
The training consists of two components. We have to have a volunteer come in and take the general hospice training program first. And that's about a 14-hour classroom-style program, or there is an online version. After that training, because there's a lot of regulatory requirements, believe it or not, from Medicare regarding volunteering in a hospice program. After that initial 14-hour training, then there's an additional training for folks who do want to be the volunteer doulas. And it consists of a psychosocial piece, a spiritual care piece. There is a nursing piece about end-of-life signs and symptoms. We incorporated a lot of different components so people are very comfortable, one, sitting with someone who's dying and understanding the signs and symptoms.
I think many listeners are probably with me wondering, what is the difference then between the care from an end-of-life doula and hospice care?
Well, our volunteers that come into hospice care that do patient care, as we describe it, those are volunteers that will go into the homes or go into, again, nursing homes, assisted livings, and sit as a companion. But many times the patients are alert, able to walk around, so they companion with them. They give respite care to the caregivers, so the caregivers can leave their home, maybe for their own doctor appointment or just for a 3 to 4 hour break. So the difference is that those folks really engage more with the patients. The end-of-life doula is really someone 24 to 48 hours of someone's end of life.
It's
very close to the end. We have a very specific criteria for requesting doulas. Yes.
And it's not medical care.
It is not medical care. It is simply comfort and a calming presence.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Gilchrist Bereavement Program Manager Debbie Geffen-Jones. We're talking about Gilchrist Bereavement Resources and the end of life doula training program. Can anyone do the training?
Absolutely. When I managed the volunteer program, people would come and say, I only want to be a doula. Because a lot of times that's really what people want to do, sit bedside with someone who's actively dying. And I would interview them, and many times they would end up doing a role as a patient care volunteer, maybe be a doula, and sometimes even help us in bereavement because we have a large bereavement volunteer program as well. So there's multiple ways to volunteer in a hospice program.
What natural skills does an end-of-life doula need?
Well, the skills needed really is having a lot of patience.
Why patience?
Because dying takes its own time, and you're sitting quietly. So you have to be able to get into your own self as well, get into the spiritual nature of what is happening with the individual, and be quiet and be reassuring. So it does have a lot, you know, you need some patience to allow death to take its time. You also need to be non-judgmental. You know, we serve many, many different types of individuals from all kinds of ethnic and race and religious beliefs, and people just have to have a non-judgmental attitude to who they're serving. We also want folks to be comfortable and understand that this sitting with someone dying may stir up some of their own experiences, so they have to be able to handle that and be able to deal with understanding that sometimes death brings some of their own emotions into it. And of course, there's the sense of just helping someone have hope and healing as someone is dying. You know, many times our doulas are sitting with not only the patients, but the families. And they're also a calming presence for that family. And that's another skill, to be calm, to be able to, you know, be soothing with the individuals. Because people are anxious at the end of life. It's frightening to see someone dying, especially if you've never experienced it before. So the doulas are that calming presence, that person who reassures that everything is going the way it should be going. That I think there might be some pain or the patient might be uncomfortable, and they're also there to help guide them through that process. Maybe even if they have to call in our nurse or during nights and weekends our on-call service. So that's another purpose for them to be there.
Call them in to address pain.
Yeah. Yes.
You've made a couple references to the spiritual dimension. Is the training based on religious faith?
No, it is not. It is not. I mean, people mistake when we hear that word spiritual for religious. And that's where I said we have to be non-judgmental, because there are many people who have no religious background or faith base, but yet they're very spiritual. So there's a much bigger difference between spirituality and religious and structured faith. And many times we've had folks that have no belief at all, and yet our doulas kind of tell us they were with someone that just gave them such a spiritual sense, and and they were calm, and they were accepting of what was happening to them.
I'm anxious to hear more about how this affects end-of-life doulas, and we're going to meet one. We're going to take a quick break now. Debbie Geffen-Jones, who's bereavement program manager at Gilchrist, is going to stay with us, and we are going to meet an end-of-life doula. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On the Record. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about the end-of-life doula training program at Gilchrist. Bereavement Program Manager Debbie Geffen-Jones has stayed with us, and joining us now is Kay Burney, who is a longtime bereavement support volunteer with Gilchrist and an end-of-life doula. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
You were in the first cohort of the end-of-life doula training. Why were you interested in becoming an end-of-life doula?
I think because of my experience working with bereaved clients and also with our patients, I learned a lot about the whole death and dying process. And dying is a period of time of great reverence. And to be a part of that, to be with someone when they're dying, is really a place of honor. It's a very, as Deb mentioned, a very spiritual place, and it's a very peaceful, calming place to be most of the times. And I wanted very much to be part of that, and I think that people who don't have experience, we're kind of a death-denying society, and so people who are coming with death the first time for them, obviously for yourself, you only die once, but family members too, it's a very scary experience. And so I think that if you have someone there who, as Deb said again, can present a calming, peaceful presence, that can be, make it not quite so scary and not so hard.
Deb, I saw you nodding when Kay was speaking. What have you heard from other volunteers about why they were drawn to the program?
People wanted to be with individuals, one, for those that had no one. So they wanted to give them that comfort of being someone to be with them as they transition from this life to whatever one believes. The other is that we are a death-denying culture. And so volunteers that do volunteer for us in hospice have a much different attitude about death. They're much more accepting, so they're much more comfortable being with someone who is dying. So I think that's part of the reason why many, many of the volunteers come to us. And then the third reason is they give back. Many of our volunteers that come to us have been families that we have served.
Kay, let me pick up on that and ask, when your friends or family heard you were going to train as an end-of-life doula, did they think it was morbid or depressing? Well, what kind of reaction did you get?
I think that people question, you know, when it, usually it's not so much my friends and family because they know me and they know my interest in this area, but people who I meet and find out that I work with Gilchrist, that I volunteer with Gilchrist, there's a certain look that comes over their face.
And either describe the look.
Just kind of the eyebrows go up and kind of, why? Why would you want to do that? I guess basically for me, I get more life-affirming lessons from working with people who are dying or people who are going through their grief for a loved one who has died than I do from anything else I do. Because I see the resiliency in human nature. We're spending time with people at the most difficult parts of their life. And to see the resiliency in human nature is very gratifying and very life-affirming.
It's really nothing short of a miracle.
A miracle?
That people are that resilient. I manage our bereavement program, so I see a lot of our clients, you know, at a very, very low point in their life. And yet the resiliency that they have to come back to life, to find hope and healing again after, you know, a loved one has died. And we don't just take care of our families after the death of a hospice patient, but we serve the community at large. So many of our counselors are seeing folks that have had many tragic losses as well. And so we have also a kids' Gilchrist Kids is our hospice pediatric program. So we see parents, and it is miraculous to see them just kind of come back to life, you know, not right away, but certainly wanting to find a way to move forward and make meaning out of the loss. And that's really the focus of it. And that's when I go back to say many of our volunteers come to us because that's part of making meaning again, finding meaning from the loss, helping, giving back. You know, it's good work. And people tell us, you know, if it feels good, you know, I'm going to do good.
Can you describe an experience you had that would help listeners understand?
Well, I think when we first started the program, one of the first experiences I had, I got a call that there was a woman who was dying, and her sister was with her in their home, and the sister was very anxious. My thought at the time, and I think what the person who called me to ask me to go and do this thought, was that this woman was alone with her sister. So I drive to the house, and I pull up in front of the house, and there must have been at least five cars there. And I went into the house, and there was a whole house full of people. So I was quite surprised, because that was not what I was expecting. I was expecting it to be just the two sisters. Well, it turned out that the whole family was there to say their goodbyes, because they had been told by the nurses that it was the end of her life. And they, it was all these different little family groups, and some of them liked each other, and some of them were not, did not get along as well. I mean, they were all being very civil to each other, but there was a lot of tension in that household. And they asked me to go and sit in the bedroom with the woman who was dying. And in different groups, they came in to say their goodbyes and to kind of be with their aunt, their grandmother, their cousin, whoever, whatever the relationship was. And I think the it was not what I anticipated was going to be my role there, but what turned out to be my role was it made it so that everybody could ask their questions, everybody could kind of say their goodbyes peacefully, quietly, and there was a mediator there so that I could perform that duty at that time. There was one, I think she was about 5-year-old, great niece who climbed up on her great aunt's bed and hugged her and looked at me and said, "Is Aunt so-and-so going to die?" And I got the feeling that nobody in the family was able to say yes to her. So I was able to say yes to her, that she was going to die, that she was dying, and it was time to say goodbye. And we could talk about that. And I think it took the fear away from not only her, but other members of the family, that it was okay.
That it was okay, and that they knew, this little niece knew it was okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's quite an experience.
It was quite an experience.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Gilchrist Bereavement Program Manager Debbie Geffen-Jones and Kay Burney, a longtime Gilchrist volunteer. We're talking about the end-of-life doula training program. Debbie, what experiences have you heard from other volunteers that stick with you?
Well, when we first started the program, we used to have the volunteers send us doula stories. So I had quite a lot of experiences that I would read about. And the theme on all the stories was that it was very life-affirming. It was a privilege to be with someone who was dying. It was an honor to serve that family or to serve that individual. And many times what Kay just described happened numerous times with other family members. And we had a doula at one point, and she even wrote a poem about her experiences. And she would sit through the night. She would go at 11, 12 o'clock at night and sit all night with someone and then walk out and just feel energized.
Energized
that she had sat with someone and had been there to comfort them, or the family was comforted to know that someone was with their loved one all night so that they could go home and get, or they can go to bed, they can get rest. So it's always, what we've always heard from all our doulas is that this is a wonderful opportunity and we're grateful to serve, and it's an honor.
Kay, let me ask you about the logistics. Are you basically on call when you're connected to a family? I mean,
well,
do you show up whenever they need you?
What happens is the volunteer coordinators at Gilchrist get calls from either the nurse or the social workers, that we try to have the doulas go in when asked between the last 24 to 48 hours. And of course, that's unpredictable, mm-hmm. you know, but they're pretty good at predicting. They do. The nurses do a very good job of knowing when those changes are happening. So they will then talk with the family, and if the family wants somebody, they will contact the volunteer coordinator. And now that we have email, what happens is it goes through an email blast to all the people who are volunteer doulas. And it will say, you know, we need a doula at such and such. Please let me know if you can do it. And then we respond if we're able to go.
And does that sometimes then turn into an all-night vigil?
Some people may say that they're willing to work for 6 hours. Some people may say 4 hours. It depends on what's going on. I know that if I ever accept a doula job, I make sure that if I say I can do it until 5 o'clock that night, I make sure I don't have anything before 8 o'clock that night at the earliest, because sometimes you get in a situation and you don't want to just walk out. So we usually, it depends on each situation, I think, is a little bit different. So I don't think anybody usually does it for more than 6 hours, but I guess there probably are some people who do. But, you want to kind of be able to stay alert and with it. And for me, I couldn't do it longer than that.
The goal is not necessarily to be with the person at the moment of death.
It could be the goal if that's what the family or what the patient has expressed an interest in. If I can give an example,
please,
about that. This came through our bereavement counselor, who saw the daughter of a gentleman who died, and he didn't want his family there with him when he died. And the family didn't want him to die alone. And so our nurses and social workers told them about our doula program. And so that was the best solution for this family, that they felt if they couldn't be there because he didn't want them there, they wanted to respect his wishes, and yet they didn't want him to be alone. So we put a doula in, and a doula was with him when he died. And so sometimes we do have doulas go, multiple doulas can go to one patient. So it could be someone's going for 6 hours, and then the next person is there for another few hours, and so forth.
That's often the case. In other words, when I leave, I always know if somebody's coming in after me. I usually talk to that person either before I leave, or I know that they're coming in, I will wait for them to come, or I will call them knowing they're going in a couple of hours.
Yeah, so we coordinate the care.
You have both mentioned that this society tends to be death-denying. From your experiences working in hospice, bereavement, end-of-life services, what would you tell somebody with that attitude when they're in this situation facing the death of?
Well, I don't know that I would have that conversation while they're facing the death of their loved one, because I don't think that would be the appropriate time to have that conversation. But when I know that when we do the support groups for people who are grieving, I talk about it at that point, that, you know, that part of going through the grief process can be so difficult because we don't talk about death and we don't talk about dying, and people are very uncomfortable about it. I oftentimes give the example of it's not only death denying, it's pain denying. We can't say that we're sad. And when people are sad because someone they love died, there's kind of like you put this little cocoon around them because we don't want to deal with pain and sadness. And I often give the example of a toddler who falls and skins their knee. And the first thing we do is, and they start crying because they've skinned their knee and they're bleeding and it hurts. And we pick them up and say, "You're okay." Well, they're not okay. It hurts. And instead of allowing them to feel the pain and to suffer a little bit and know that they're going to be okay and reassure them, we tell them that they're not really hurt. And I think we do that about people who are in grief also. And it makes the person who's grieving have sometimes a more difficult time because no one wants to see the people they love being sad.
Is an end-of-life doula something you would suggest for everyone?
No, because people like to die alone too.
Or just with their family members.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a pretty reverent time when somebody dies. And so, you know, we may have been giving services to a patient and ask if they want somebody there at the end of the life, and they oftentimes will say no, that they just want to be with their family when they die, and they don't want another person there.
Or they will die alone. People will die alone, and they want to die alone. They don't want their families there. They will definitely, and we've seen that over and over again, where people will folks who are dying in that actively dying process where they're really not responsive, but they can hear it till the end, they'll know if someone has walked out of the room, and they will choose that moment to die.
You've given us so much to think about. I'm really grateful. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Gilchrist Bereavement Program Manager Debbie Geffen-Jones and Kay Burney, end-of-life doula, at the On the Record page, WYPR.org. We have a link to more information about the end-of-life doula training program offered at Gilchrist. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.